All right, she says with a slight lisp on the S. No harm done. I pat her on the part of her arm that doesn't have any coffee dripping from it. I'll pay for the cleaning, of course, I say. The man wants to leave, I can sense it, but he's also concerned about her. I narrow my eyes at him. Do we know you? I ask, my tone dripping with suspicion. I make it sound like he's the interloper. He recoils in surprise and shakes his head.
No, sorry.
Well then, I'll take it from here, I say, and I'm pleased that he doesn't need to be told twice. I turn back to the woman and put my hand on her arm. You're sure you're okay? I didn't hurt you, did I? She starts to say something, but then her face collapses and she bursts into tears. What happened? I ask softly. What's made you so upset? She opens her mouth, distorting her face, but still doesn't reply. Which way are you going? I ask gently. She shakes her head. I don't know. I feel my shoulders drop. I am beginning to think that she's not the staff. She's an elderly relative with a memory problem. She reminds me of a woman I met once waiting for my parents outside the Lincoln Center. She must have been at least 70, beautifully dressed, her fingers nervously clutching at large pearls on her neck. She came up to me because she needed my help. Or so she said. Of course, I replied. I was normal then, kind even. She held out a page torn out of those old desk calendars. On it, scribbled in pencil, was a date and a time. Do you know what this is? She asked. No. Sorry. She looked on the verge of tears. It's just that I don't remember, she said. I figured she had some kind of memory lapse, and I pointed to the phone number scribbled under the date and time. Maybe you should call this number. They might be able to tell you something. That seemed to confuse her again, so I handed over my cell, a black flip phone that back then was the coolest thing ever. Try it. Call them now. See what they say. I even punched the numbers in for her. She grabbed it and took off across the plaza with my cell phone still in her dried-up bony fingers. I stood there frozen, then shook myself awake and took off after her. Excuse me? You've got my phone! But she'd already turned the corner onto Amsterdam Avenue, and next thing I knew, she was getting onto the M11. When the bus drove past me, I raised my arms to get her attention, but she looked straight ahead. I couldn't work out whether she was crazy or whether this was some elaborate scam to steal my phone. But I saw her again once, months later. I guess she had a thing for the performing arts because my mother and I were standing outside the Belasco Theater on Broadway when she approached us, still with her scribbled, torn-off piece of paper. She asked my mother for help, and I tugged at my mother's sleeve. Don't, I said. Then I positioned myself in front of the woman and extended my hand. Can I have my phone back? I could tell from the angry look in her eyes that she knew she'd been caught out. But my mother said my name in a shocked voice. Claire, what's gotten into you? I told her I'd explain later, but when I turned back, the woman had disappeared through the crowd. Then my mother scolded me for being rude and scaring that poor woman away. No, Mom. She was about to steal your BlackBerry. Remember how I told you an old woman stole my phone? Don't be ridiculous, Claire. That had nothing to do with this. In my mother's mind, the old woman who had taken my phone was poor and homeless and desperate and probably suffering from dementia. She certainly didn't wear a string of pearls and a nice tailored jacket. I take another look now at the woman in front of me. But it's definitely not the same woman, Not even remotely. And the other one would have to be 80 or 90 years old by now, surely, whereas this woman is in her 50s. Still, this is New York. You can't be too careful. She fired me, she says at last, an astonished look on her face like she can't quite believe it herself. That makes my pulse bounce with the possibilities. Can I take you somewhere? I ask, which makes no sense since I don't have a car and I sure can't afford cab fare anywhere. Her chin wobbles. I have nowhere to go, she says. Nowhere at all. Okay. Well, let me think. And for a crazy moment, I consider bringing her home with me. Then I run through the various scenarios that would entail. Would she end up sleeping on the couch? Would she turn into that dreaded New York curse, the guest that wouldn't leave? Would I have to pay extra rent for her? Let me take you for a drink, my treat. Then you can decide what to do. Chapter 5. I didn't want to take her to my stakeout establishment, so we walked together quickly to the bar at the Plaza Hotel 2 blocks away, me holding her firmly by the elbow, just in case she changes her mind. They make the best martinis, I say, as if I went there all the time. Inside, I maneuver her toward the big red velvet armchairs and press a menu into her hands. She selects a Tattinger champagne and Dormant de Canton liqueur, while I desperately scan the page for the cheapest drink. Then throw caution to the wind and get a martini. This is so nice, she says, taking her phone out and setting it down on the table. Isn't it? I love this place, I reply, and wave at a complete stranger sitting at a distant table, muttering, oh, look, it's Joanna Dubois, under my breath. I wait until the waiter has returned with our drinks and a complimentary bowl of green olives, then turn to her earnestly. So, tell me, Diane. It's Diane, isn't it? Okay, good. So, tell me, who fired you?
I work for the Carters. Mrs. Carter fired me. Bingo!
I feel like I'd scratched off a lottery ticket and won $50. That's just terrible. And what did you do for this, Mrs. Carter? She knocks back her glass, and when she puts it down again, it's empty. I do the same and quickly signal the waiter for another round, already wincing at the damage this evening is going to do to my Visa card.
I was the housekeeper in the Carter household.
I nod. The waiter puts down our drinks in front of us. My heart is racing as I hand him my credit card. Keep it for the tab, I say, then wait until he's gone and whisper, you were the housekeeper? Diane nods, and this time only takes a sip, thank God, leaving the room with a pale, sticky imprint of her lips.
I was, all the way back to the first Mrs. Carter.
There was a first Mrs. Carter?
Yes, but they got divorced. Mr. Carter kept me on, which was nice.
What's the second Mrs. Carter like? Other than a complete and utter bitch, obviously. I laugh, but she flinches, and I quickly add, for firing you, that's what I meant. She nods.
She's different. Very different from the first. I mean, the first Mrs. Carter, she had style. She was a real lady. And she was really busy all the time because she worked so hard. The second Mrs. Carter, she doesn't work at all, so I don't know why she's tired all the time.
Right. Good question. Why is she tired all the time? She makes a face like she's reluctantly admitting to something.
She's got the baby.
Right.
I've never looked after children, let alone babies. I don't know what to do. I said to her once you should hire a full-time nanny, since you're so tired all the time. She looked at me like I'd suggested she send Mia to the moon.
I nod. Like Laika, the dog.
Like who?
Never mind. Keep going. She shrugs.
That's it.
Really? Okay. Well, what about Mr. Carter? What's he like?
Very nice. He's an old-fashioned gentleman. Mr. Carter is always calm, always kind, very patient with little Mia, too. Although he works hard, so he's not at home much. He's a partner in a law firm. His first wife was a lawyer, too.
I think back to the photos of their wedding. A nice, rich guy like that? He would have been the ideal mark for Hannah. He never stood a chance.
What's the house like?
Must be something, huh?
Beautiful.
She dabs at her eyes again.
You should see Mr. Carter's art collection. It's like a museum, only more beautiful. I took very good care of his art pieces. I was very particular with them. I know he appreciated it.
Art collection?
Big, colorful paintings, sculptures, and the antiques. Furniture like you've never seen. It's a beautiful place, the Carters. But she's not from this world. You can see that a mile off. And I'm not used to babies, but I did my best, and I enjoyed it. I liked little Mia. She's sweet as pie. But I've work to do, you know?
Of course you do.
If I may, why did she fire you?
She twirls her glass, which is empty again, and I take the hint. I'm biting my bottom lip as I signal the waiter for yet another round. At this point, I don't even know if my card will cover the bill. Small red circles grow on her cheeks. She wipes her nose with her sleeve. I put my hand on her arm.
I was only trying to help her,
she says,
to explain how to behave in such company, how to run a house like that. That sort of thing. Like I said, she's not the first Mrs. Carter, and that's the truth. She just doesn't have that kind of class, you know?
I do know, I assure her. Still, I shudder at the idea of being lectured by the staff.
But why did she fire you? I may have overdone it, I suppose.
By now, she's talking like someone who is not used to drinking. Not so much because she's slurring her words, although there's that, but because she's talking in circles. Like what a nice man Mr. Carter is, and how tired Mrs. Carter is, how the second Mrs. Carter is not like the first Mrs. Carter. At one stage, she goes to the bathroom, and I slip her phone discreetly onto my lap. It's a Nokia. One of those old-style ones that only makes phone calls and sends texts and not a lot more. There's no passcode required, so I scroll through her minimal contact list to the Carters, then take a photo of the number with my own cell. She returns from the bathroom and drops her face in her hands.
What am I going to do?
She wails. I'm not buying the story about why she was fired. It's too vague, for one thing. But I don't think I'm going to get any more out of her. I'm so sorry. Look, I don't know this Mrs. Carter from Adam, but I can see what a... I search for the right words. Reliable woman you are. You present extremely well. You're obviously someone who works hard and is prepared to go the extra mile. You're clearly not someone who should be fired. I pull out a bar of chocolate from my bag, break it into pieces while it's still in the wrapper, and open it with my teeth. She takes the piece I offer her. Maybe we should go now, I say. I don't dare ask where she'll go. I'm already constructing excuses as to why she can't come with me when she says,
I better call my sister. I'll go stay with her in Queens. She's recovering from pneumonia, so she'll be glad for the company. And a help, I'm sure.
Oh, good.
Good. Do you think I should go and apologize to Mrs. Carter? What do you think? Maybe if I explain to her that I didn't mean anything by it. And then I can help more with little Mia, too.
She nods repeatedly, her eyebrows raised like she's prompting me to agree. Look, Diane, I'm very sorry this has happened. I think you should go to your sister's and have a few days off. Put your feet up. Watch Netflix. Sometimes the Lord sends these challenges to us for a reason. Maybe there's a better position right around the corner. In fact, I'm sure there is. Give it a chance. Give your future a chance, Diane. She looks startled, and I don't know what I've said wrong. Then she reaches for her coat on the seat next to her.
Thank you, Claire. You've been very kind.
She's getting up already, and I ask her to wait while I signal for the bill, which my card manages to cover, incredibly. It's raining, and I pull the hood of my raincoat up over my head. Shall we walk to the subway together? She shakes her head. I get the feeling she wants me gone, but I follow her anyway because I can tell she's going back there. I just know it, and it's making me angry. She's going to ask for her job back. She is going to say she is so very sorry, Mrs. Carter, and worm her way back in. But I can't let that happen. There's a vacancy in the Carter's residence now, and I want to keep it that way. She stands outside their building on the other side of the street. Upstairs, the drapes move and Hannah's face is at the window. I step back behind Diane and whisper in her ear, "Oh, that's her, is it? I know her. Her name is Hannah. She hates you, she told me. She can't stand you, and she's been looking for a way to get rid of you." I leave her there, looking like that wet rat a few feet away bobbing in the storm sewer, except that one is dead. So not the same, exactly. That one looks like it's been run over by a bus before getting stuck against the stormwater drain. Chapter 6. It's the next day. Not a cloud in the sky, and the air feels fresh after all the rain last night. I've only just taken my seat at the bar when Hannah's door opens, and she appears with her baby in her arms. With her is an older woman with short white hair and masses of jewelry that I recognize from the wedding photos as Harvey's mother, Patsy. She's wearing a light beige raincoat, Burberry probably, and dark brown pants. She kisses Hannah on the cheek before adjusting her sunglasses, then walks away briskly. Hannah stands there, bouncing Mia on the spot for a moment, then takes a backward step before reappearing with something in her right hand. And then I see the baby's hands in the air. She's leaning forward in Hannah's arms toward the mailbox that hangs to the side of the door. Her little chubby fingers open and close, trying to grasp the edge of a white envelope. I am frozen, my coffee cup halfway to my mouth, waiting for what is coming next. My heart starts to beat really fast as I watch Hannah put the key in and slide her hand under the flap. Part of me doesn't want to look. The other part would give anything to see the expression on her face. But she's a little bit too far away for that. There's a split second where she doesn't move. And then she does this kind of dance, and it's the funniest thing I've seen in a long time. It's like she's tap dancing, bouncing around the dead, still wet, still sticky with blood, flat as a pancake rat that I squeezed into the box last night. She's shaking her hand like crazy, making little jumps on the spot. Jesus, give her a cane and a top hat and put her on the stage. That woman is comedy gold. I lean forward to see what Harvey's mother is doing. But she's almost at the end of the street by now. She doesn't turn around, not even when Mia starts to wail. "That must be a really funny scene you're writing," the waiter says from the next table, and I realize I've been laughing out loud the entire time. Not wanting to brag, but the rat was a stroke of genius, hands down. Of course, Hannah will think Diane, irate ex-employee, put it there, I can't wait to think up more evil little deeds that, quote, Diane, end quote, might do to her. By the time I'm done, Diane will have a better chance at being selected for the International Space Station than getting her old job back. It's almost 7 p.m., and the lights have come on in the Carter's household. All I see are shadows behind drapes, passing from room to room. I know she's not going out again, but I don't want to go home yet. Because how often do you get a win like that? I can't tell April about any of this. How was your day? Awesome. You'll never guess what I did today. But I want to be around people. I want noise. I'm excited and I'm happy and I want to get drunk. So I go directly to Paddy's on Sullivan, which is a dingy, grungy old Irish pub where the lighting is dim and the drinks are cheap. And it's also my local. I don't remember much after that. Just snatches. Me laughing, falling over, a tattooed arm helping me up. And now I don't know where I am. The sun is bright, streaming into the room between the brown drapes. My heart is beating too fast. My head hurts. I'm so thirsty it makes my tongue stick to the roof of my mouth. I spot a glass of water next to the bed. At least I hope it's water, with a barely there layer of dust on top. I grab it and gulp it down. Then I hear noises, water running, things moving on surfaces. There's someone here. I wipe a hand down my face. It reeks of sex and cigarettes. I close my eyes and try to remember what he looks like. A flash of black hair, a tattoo like ivy growing up and around his arm and along his shoulder blade. The same arm as last night in the bar. An image comes into focus. I can see myself tracing it with one finger while he takes a deep drag from a cigarette, dropping ash on his chest. "You smoke inside?" I remember asking, rubbing the ash into his chest. "You're awake." The sound of his voice makes me gasp. He's leaning against the wall, his arms crossed on his chest. His hair is wet and he's clean shaven. No trace of the day-old beard that chafed my cheeks last night. Pity, I liked that. I pull the sheet up to cover my breasts and scratch my scalp with my other hand. "Hello," I say. I wish he'd go now. I feel fat, ugly, exposed.
"You're okay?"
"Kinda."
"Hangover?"
I roll my eyes, which sends a pounding ache into my skull. There's a couple of awkward seconds of silence. Then he says,
"There's coffee in the kitchen. See you in there."
But I don't go in for coffee. I get dressed and slip into the bathroom to pee. I glance in the mirror and roll my eyes at my own reflection. My mascara has smudged below my eyes. My face is blotchy from alcohol. I rummage through the cabinet and find some pills. I try to read the label, but I can't focus, so I just take them and shove them in my pocket. I don't say goodbye. I just leave. Back at the apartment, I rummage through my own bathroom cabinet for some painkillers, but I can't find any. I figure that's because I finished the last bottle and never got around to buying some more. I'm pretty sure I did that last time, too, so I guess if April has stocked up, she's keeping them somewhere out of my reach. I lie down on my bed, but my head hurts too much to sleep. I gaze lazily around my small, pathetic room. Some days I don't mind it. I think of it as a stopgap, but other days it depresses the hell out of me. This is one of those days, so I get up again and go to work on my project. One thing about Hannah, she almost never goes out. On the one hand, I can see why she doesn't want to take Mia with her to her therapist. Dr. Malone would charge for the baby, I'm sure of it. $275 with 10% off on her 10th visit. Would you like to purchase a lifetime pack for her now? But what about baby yoga, the petting zoo, mommy and baby gym? I wonder whether Harvey keeps her locked up. Maybe he's one of those controlling husbands who likes to keep his wife on a tight leash. Maybe that's why she never buys expensive clothes. Maybe he only gives her a microscopic allowance. They're not hurting, though, that's for sure. I found him in an article about America's most prestigious law firms. The story is a couple years old, but still. His firm has offices in London and Singapore, and close to $1 billion in annual revenue. Hannah does take the baby out for a stroll occasionally, and once she went to the florist up on Park Avenue, poppies and blooms. I got very excited to see her chatting up some guy, or maybe it was the other way around. It looked innocent enough on the outside, and not at all like a lover's assignation. But then again, who knows what evil lies in her dark heart? I do. Anyway, days go by. Days! I do not leave my post in case something happens, like Diane showing up with her broken and contrite heart. Just to be sure she wouldn't be welcome, I made a few late-night anonymous but lispy calls.
Fuck you, Mrs. Carter.
So much fun. But I need to remain vigilant, so I call work again and say that I am sick. Again? What's the matter with you? I can hear the disappointment in Dr. Lowe's voice. Sometimes I have to remind myself what a creep he is. Then, miracle of all miracles, a woman in her early 50s, carrying a large buff envelope and wearing a wool coat, of all things, rings the doorbell, just as I'm thinking of leaving. You can always tell people going to a job interview because, A, they wear clothes that don't fit very well and are completely inappropriate for the weather. B, they carry a folder or a clipboard or some kind of leather compendium if they really want to impress, where they file their pathetic little CV, half of which is made up anyway. And C, they look up for house numbers, which is what this woman has just done. I've had a job interview myself recently, and all three checked out. When she comes out again, I am already in position with my own large folder, which is part of my props at the bar, so that's good luck there. I bump into her. Silly me, because I'm not looking where I'm going, am I? I am too busy looking up at house numbers. I am so sorry. Honestly, this is not my day. I have a job interview in 2 minutes and I must have written down the wrong address because the people at number 36 over there definitely do not need a math tutor. Shit! Oh, I love that coat, by the way. She frowns and puckers her lips, but not in a good way. A math tutor? I've just been to see about the housekeeper's position. She points behind her to the Carter's house. But the child is only a baby. I don't think she needs a math tutor. I pretend to look over my notes. No, definitely no housekeeping involved. Which agency sent you? She narrows her eyes at me. HSG. And you? Nope, not HSG. That's too bad. I better go. Thanks for your help, and good luck. Chapter 7. I just need a reference, and then I'm going to contact these HSG people. I'm going to tell them that I am looking for a housekeeper position. Live-in, please. Preferably with babies because I love them so much. And I'm very, very good. Just ask my reference. I have a cousin, a second cousin, to be precise, up in Connecticut. Her name is Emily. She's older than I am, and I haven't seen her in years, but we used to visit them when I was a kid. Then, after my parents died, she took us in, and my brother John and I lived with them from then on. I didn't really bond, mostly because I was too fucked up, too sad, too lost. It's hard to cut through that for anyone. John fared a lot better, I suppose because he's so much younger than I am. I know he keeps in touch with them, and last I heard he was in college somewhere. I don't know where, and I don't care. One thing about Emily is that she never came to court to support us back then. But later, when I moved into her house, she asked me once, almost in a whisper, "Did he really do those things? Your father?" I could never look at her the same after that. We exchange cards at Christmas, and by that I mean she sends me a card. And I vaguely tell myself I might send her one next year or not, then put hers in the trash. I call her now and then to say hello, usually when I'm drunk. If she's surprised to hear from me, she doesn't let on. We chat awkwardly about her kids. She asks if I've been in touch with John. I say no. She suggests I come and visit around Thanksgiving. I note she doesn't say for Thanksgiving. She says it must be shockingly hot in the city, even though it's not even summer yet, and at least they get the sea breeze. I agree with everything she says. When we run out of things to say, she waits a beat and then asks, "Everything all right, Claire? Do you need money?" I've never asked her for money, ever. I have stolen some, imitated her signature on checks, that sort of thing. In fact, I became so good at imitating her handwriting that once, when I wanted to be excused from swimming lessons because I was being teased about my weight, I wrote a long and comprehensive explanation of why chlorine was hazardous for my skin, and I was not to be exposed to it under any circumstances. Weeks later, she found it crumpled at the bottom of my bag. "We should get that skin condition of yours looked at," she said. I didn't have a skin condition, but she really believed she'd written the letter and then forgot. "I don't need money," I say. "I want your love. Got any to spare? I have a small favor to ask." "Oh, what is it?" "I'm playing a prank on a friend of mine. It's a long story, but I was wondering if I could give your name as a reference for a housekeeper's job."
"What housekeeper? What on earth are you talking about?"
It made a lot of sense in my head before, but it sure doesn't make any sense now. "I just need someone like you of your standing to vouch for someone. You just have to say you know this person and that she was your housekeeper for 3 years, and that she was fabulous. You'd recommend her to anyone. Is that okay? Can you do that?"
"You want me to vouch for a housekeeper I've never met?"
"It's just a joke, Emily. It would take too long to explain, but I'd really appreciate it. If I could put you down as a reference."
"I don't know. Emily, please do this for me." "I don't know, Claire. I don't feel comfortable about this."
"It's no big deal. Just a joke, like I said."
"Then why don't you ask one of your friends? I'm sorry. Emily?"
She won't budge, and that's that. So I hang up on her without saying goodbye, mutter, "Fuck you," at the phone, and bite my knuckle a while. Then I call Dr. Lowe. "I'm resigning," I tell him. "I'm applying for a new job and I need a reference. I would like you to say that I worked as a housekeeper for you and Mrs. Lowe. I was extremely reliable. Everything was perfect. You were sorry to lose me." At least that part is true. "And I'm great with kids, too. Oh, and I took extremely good care of your art collection."
"What, you don't own any artworks?"
"Sure you do, Dr. Lowe."
"Freak,"
he mutters and hangs up on me. In the end, I call the agency.
"This is Mrs. Carter speaking," I say. "They're so nice. Really friendly people. Mrs. Carter, how are you? One moment, I'll put you through to Carlotta," they say.
I tell Carlotta that I've muddled everything and I can't remember what time or who is my next applicant.
Louise Martin at 11 a.m. tomorrow.
Ah, yes, of course. Could you ask Louise to come at 10 a.m. tomorrow instead? Like I said, very muddled. I'd lose my head if it wasn't screwed on. Then I set up an email account that I'll use to contact Hannah later. hsgsolutions@gmail.com, because hsg@gmail.com is unfortunately not available. I set the name of the sender to Housekeeping Solutions Group and drop their logo in the footer. I don't bother going to the bar. I decide to catch up on some sleep instead so that by the next day, I don't look like the type of person who stays up all night drinking. I even go to the grocery store and pick up 2 packets of Amy's frozen mac and cheese for April and me. That night, we sit together on the couch and watch House of Cards. And when I tell her I'm going to bed, she hugs me and says, "I worry about you, you know. That's why I get mad sometimes." And it makes my eyes swim, because nobody worries about me anymore, except April. The next day at 10 a.m., I am fishing around my bag just outside the Carter's house when Louise Martin arrives, exactly on time. She's taller than I am and thinner, too, with short brown hair. But we're about the same age. Later, I'll find out that we're exactly the same age, so that's good. "Excuse me," she says, smiling. "I'm going in there." I look up. "Oh, well, I better get out of your way." I smile, then cock my head at her. "You're not the new housekeeper, are you?" She frowns. "Excuse me?" "It's just that I came all the way from New Jersey for this interview, and now..." I jerk my thumb behind me. "She just told me the housekeeper position is gone." I make a face.
"Gone?"
Her eyes grow wide. "Been filled this morning. Thanks so much for letting me know, right?" I shake my head. I wish the agency had told me. I've come all this way for nothing. "Anyway, that's not your problem, even if it is you. No hard feelings. I hope you enjoy the job. Now, where is that Metro card?" She's not happy, Louise Martin. No, she's not the new housekeeper, and yes, she too has come from far away for this interview. She's going to call someone and ask for an explanation. I commiserate. "Want a cup of coffee?" "My treat," I say. I take her to Starbucks and buy her a salted caramel mocha. While we wait for our order, I go to the bathroom and call Carlotta at the agency. "Hannah Carter here. So sorry, but I've hired someone for the position."
"Yes, that's right."
"Yes, please cancel any remaining candidates."
"No, thank you."
Half an hour later, we leave together, kiss goodbye outside, and promise to keep in touch, especially in case one of us hears of anything. I still have 15 minutes before Hannah expects to interview Louise Martin, and I've learned everything I need to know about her. I'm ready. Chapter 8. Hannah Wilson and I have only met once in person, very briefly. But we've seen each other in court and on TV. I'd been feeling confident she wouldn't recognize me, but then at 4 o'clock this morning, I woke up in a panic. What if she did? So I went to the all-night drugstore on the corner for some hair color. Then I cut my hair short in front of the bathroom mirror, the scissors hacking at it, and with every snip I thought of her. "Time for your comeuppance, Mrs. Carter." Snip! I told myself that if there was the slightest flicker of recognition, I would tell a lie. That I had already accepted another position and I had come to let her know I was no longer available. Then I would leave. But one thing I've noticed about having pimple-ridden skin is that people don't look too closely. Also, people trust me.
My face is a trustworthy face. It wasn't always this way. I've had some people say terrible things about me. I was called a weirdo more than once. But I got better at it. I learned. I practiced till I got perfect. Poker face, kind face, concerned face, trustworthy face. It goes without saying that by the time I arrive at the appointed time, my finger poised on the doorbell outside the Carter's brownstone, I know I'm about to make a really bad, very bad mistake. I tell myself to turn around and go, that there is still time. But my legs are shaking and they're not listening, and now the door has opened wide and Hannah Carter stands there, a big smile on her face and her hand extended.
Hello, you must be Louise. Come on in. I'm Hannah Carter.
I've been looking at Hannah for 2 weeks now, but it's still a shock up close like this. Her skin is beautiful, like a peach, but her gray eyes look red-rimmed and tired. I suspect my late-night phone calls may have something to do with that, so that's nice. She's wearing a simple white shirt and jeans and a pair of ballet flats. The only jewelry other than her rings is two small diamond earrings. I shake her hand limply and step inside. And I can't believe I'm here. The foyer is gorgeous, with pale walls adorned by colorful paintings and Art Deco lamps, and a tiled floor with a dark mosaic design. There are two antique console tables on either side, carrying cheerful bouquets of yellow flowers. A green velvet couch runs along one wall, and at the back of the room is the circular staircase, curling up along the wall. I know, it's grand, isn't it? I hope it's not putting you off. I turn to her and force myself to focus. Hannah Carter is smiling at me. She thinks I'm a 24-year-old housekeeper looking for a job. I study her face, waiting for her to recognize me, my eyes flicking back to the door. But she just looks normal. Certainly not confused. I think I'm in.
Not at all. You have a beautiful home, Mrs. Carter. Thank you. It has nothing to do with me, you know. I didn't decorate it. If I had, there would be a lot more color, for one thing.
She winks at me.
This way. Let's walk up. It's just the one floor.
I love color, I say brightly. But I feel a dampness creeping up my hairline and a rivulet starts to run down the side of my neck. We arrive in the kitchen, which is smaller than I'd expected. She indicates a stool at the kitchen island. I pull it out and it scrapes loudly on the tile floor. There's a large notepad in the center and she reaches for it.
Now, Louise Martin.
That's me. But she's wearing the same perfume my mother wore. Clive Christian number one, and it takes me back with a shock so unexpected that for a moment I can't breathe. She opens a cupboard and brandishes two mugs and asks,
"Would you like a cup of coffee? Or tea?"
"Tea would be very nice, thank you." I stand up from my seat. "Here, let me. You sit down, Mrs. Carter. It's better for me to do something. It helps me hide my discomfort." And before she has time to protest, I've put the kettle on to boil, opened cupboards at random until I found a teapot, and now I have two packets of tea, one in each hand. I cock my head at her and ask,
"Which one, mint or Earl Grey?"
"Let's go with mint," she says. "I don't know how long the Earl Grey's been here for. Definitely before my time." She laughs.
"I was hoping you'd say mint."
Then on impulse, I open the trash can and throw the other packet into it. She lets out a snort of laughter, and by the time I put the steaming mug in front of her, I can tell she's relaxed.
She likes me.
I decide to be like a breath of fresh air. Friendly, not too obsequious. Happy. Diane, I am not. She asks about my previous employers, Mr. and Mrs. Van Kemp,
where I have worked for the past 5 years as per Louise's history.
Your references are excellent, by the way, she says. Glowing.
She smiles.
Thank you. I enjoyed working for Mr. and Mrs. Van Kemp very much. I was sorry to leave them.
Why did you leave them? She asks. I put both hands around my mug.
My mother. She wasn't well. Breast cancer. It's just her and me. My dad died a few years back. I just couldn't bear the thought of her fighting this on her own, you know?
Is she? I shake my head and smile broadly.
Oh, no. She's fine. Better than fine, even. She's in remission, thank God. But the treatment was rough. All these sessions of chemo, they'd take it out of you. But she's okay now.
I'm glad, she says. Then she goes back to her clipboard and I'm thinking, don't punch her, not yet.
My husband is an art collector, as you may have seen on the way in here. We own a number of precious works, many of which are on display around this house.
Yes, I see that. They're beautiful.
Do you have any experience caring for antiques and artworks?
I am ready for that one.
Mrs. Van Kemp, in my last position, she loved her art and she showed me what to do. It was my favorite part of the job. I loved spending time with all these beautiful pictures.
I tell her some brain-numbingly boring details about protective cotton gloves and sweaty palms, acrylics versus oils, when to use a little moisture on the cloth. I rub my fingertips together.
It's the sweat that's the problem. It can leave a mark on furniture, too. I prefer to use soft rags only, dry ones, except if I'm cleaning oil paintings, because they attract dust, have you noticed? So much pollution in this city, it leaves grime over the years. Anyway, a bit of water on the cloth is best for those, but only very occasionally.
By now, I'm starting to sound like I'm going for the wrong job.
It's a housekeeper she wants, not a conservator. But she smiles and says,
my husband is going to love you.
And I'm thinking,
babe, wait till he sees my tits.
She writes things down, and all the time I stare at her face. And it makes my heart beat so hard, I can feel it in my throat. She really has no idea who I am, which is incredible to me because I, on the other hand, am so aware of her, it's making every fiber of my being tingle, and not in a good way.
We have a baby girl. She's asleep right now, thank God.
Her eyes flick to the baby monitor on the kitchen bench. Baby Mia is fast asleep on the pixelated gray screen.
She's almost 4 months old. We need, or I need, more to the point, a bit of help with her.
She makes an apologetic face like she should be better at it, like she's afraid I'll think she's not a good mother. I give her a reassuring smile.
I love children. I helped care for the Van Kemp's children, 3 of them. The youngest, Bethany, was 1 year old when I started with the family. Mrs. Van Kemp was going back to work, and I was able to help a lot, which was lovely. I enjoyed it very much.
Blah, blah, blah.
She's holding a red and gold Mont Blanc pen, flicking it back and forth between 2 fingers, tapping it against the marble tabletop.
That's wonderful, she says. Music to my ears.
But I can't stop staring at her hand because this pen, it must cost close to $1,000. And she's playing with it like it's some cheap plastic Bic from Walmart. I consider taking it away from her if she doesn't stop soon.
Stop playing with the pen. A pen like that deserves some respect.
Mrs. Carter, I pointed her hand.
Yes?
It's just the way you're tapping that pen on the table. Maybe you don't realize you're doing it.
Oh, No, you're right. I didn't realize.
It looks like a Mont Blanc, is it? She turns the pen in her hand and frowns at it like she's never seen it before.
Yes. How do you know?
I point to the tip of the cap. That little gold symbol here, like a snow top. Mrs. Van Camp owns one, too, but hers is black and white. She's very careful with it. They're so expensive, I just thought... Sorry, I shouldn't have said anything.
No, thank you. I'm glad you did. It was a gift from my husband when I gave birth to our daughter.
She smiles.
He showered me with gifts for a whole week when Mia was born. Sweet, isn't it? He won't be very happy with me if I break it.
And we both laugh, like we're gently poking fun at Mr. Carter and his expensive gift habits.
Even the ink is special. Take a look.
She scribbles on the corner of the page and holds it up to show me.
Barbados blue. Did you know there were so many different shades of blue ink?
She shakes her head like it's all so ridiculous, but she's not fooling me. I'd bet a bottle of Grey Goose that she knows exactly how much this pen costs. It looks like a limited edition. I bet she chose it. She puts the clipboard away.
This may be a little personal, but I'm just curious. Why would you want to work here as a live-in housekeeper, I mean? You're only,
she glances at my CV,
24. You could study. There must be other things you'd like to do with your life.
Luckily for me, Louise was very chatty yesterday.
I'm saving money, Mrs. Carter. This is my 5-year plan, or I hope it is. I love to sew and make clothes, and I can't save money if I have to rent a place myself. I'm hoping that within 5 years I will have saved enough to start my own business. My own clothing store. Maybe in Queens.
I shrug, a little coyly. I know how crazy that sounds, me wanting my own business someday.
No, not at all. I understand that more than you think. I think you'd be as good as anyone else.
Thank you. I sure hope I didn't just shoot myself in the foot by announcing my 5-year plan. I laugh.
Of course not. I'd love to find out more about your 5-year plan. You may well inspire me about my own 5-year plan.
At one point, she asks,
what will you bring to this position that other candidates might not?
I think about it. I even stare out the window. I'm just a really hard worker. And that has to be the first time I've used those words to describe myself. I even throw in something about work ethic, which, considering what she did to my family when she worked for us, makes me want to hoot with laughter. Then she tells me about the position. 5 stories, 6 bedrooms, 7 bathrooms, 1 million sitting rooms, breakfast room, TV room, terraces, floorboards, rugs, laundry. She goes through all the chores I'd have to do. Bathroom cleaning, kitchen cleaning, grocery shopping, running errands, surface polishing, changing linens, refrigerator cleaning, taking out the trash, taking care of plants. My eyes glaze over and I have to pinch myself to keep from falling asleep.
Is that all good?
She asks. I think of all the objections I could raise. Like there's only so many hours in the day, 24 at my last count. And since it's only her and her husband and the baby, would they consider downsizing? Also, did Diane really do all these things all by herself? I don't think so. Diane does not look superhuman to me. But then again, why fret? Once I'm done here, the cleanliness of the place will be the last of Hannah's worries.
Absolutely. All good, I reply.
When we walk down the stairs, I ask her, have you interviewed many people for the position?
No, there aren't that many people who are prepared to live and work with their employer full time. That's why I asked you about that earlier. I've seen 2 people so far, but they weren't a good fit.
Oh, that reminds me, when can you start? Because I need someone urgently. I know then that I've done as well as I possibly could. At least I'm in the running. And the funniest thing is that before she closes the door behind me, I catch her glancing up and down the street distractedly. And I know she's looking out for Crazy Diane. Crazy Diane, who leaves dead rats in her mailbox and calls her at night with vile, threatening words. Chapter 9. I leave it for 30 minutes. Any longer and she might contact the agency, maybe even gush about Louise Martin. I pray silently that she hasn't done so as I make the call. My stomach clenched. She answers on the first ring, and when I announce myself, her tone is a little puzzled but warm, and my whole body relaxes as I breathe out. Mrs. Carter, I hope you don't mind. The agency gave me your number. They said it was all right. It's just that I've been offered another position, you see. Yes, just now. But I wanted to check in case, well, I'll be honest with you, I thought you were so nice. And I love the idea of helping you look after a little one, so I wondered if you'd made up your mind about me one way or another. Oh, really? That's awesome. I'm so happy, Mrs. Carter. You won't regret it. I promise. No, that's all right. I'll call the agency now and tell them. That's no problem at all. It's better for me to let them know. Thank you so much, Mrs. Carter. Then I send the email I've already drafted from my fake Housekeeping Solutions Group account. Dear Mrs. Carter, we're delighted to let you know that Ms. Louise Martin has accepted your offer of employment as live-in housekeeper. Louise will start her position on Monday, blah, blah, blah. We will forward our invoice after the agreed trial period, blah, blah, blah. She replies almost immediately, saying she really looks forward to Louise becoming part of the family, which I think is a very strange thing to say to a new employee, and under different circumstances, I think I would find it creepy. It may be risky, all this, but not that risky. The key is to anticipate what the other party is going to do next and stay one step ahead. I'm not going to be there long, just long enough to reach my goal, and then I'm out of there. I want redress. I want her to admit what she did to me and my family, to admit it was all a lie, and I want her to do that publicly. Some people might say that's impossible, but those people are not consumed like I am. This is my life's work now, and if I could make her feel miserable in the process, so miserable that she would want to die, well, that would be nice. That night, I tell April I'm going to Pittsfield for a while. Just a week or two, I say, to stay with my cousin Mary, who is convalescing. Pneumonia. Terrible illness, that. Oh, will she be all right? She asks, digging into her bowl of vanilla ice cream. I already finished mine, and I'm wiping it with my finger and licking it. Oh, yes, eventually. She turns down the volume on the TV. How long will you be gone? I've thought about this all day, obviously. How long will it take me to achieve my plan? Let's see. Step one, get inside the house. Check. Step two, seduce Harvey. Now, some people might laugh at the prospect of me, sad, fat, ugly me, seducing a man like Harvey when he's got someone like Hannah at home. But it's not love I'm offering. It's a hand job and more. It's all the things his wife won't do, and for free. Show me a man who'll turn that down. Except it's not for free. Not really. But it's Hannah we'll have to pay. Because I'm going to make some good videos on my phone. Ones where I role-play the shy, reluctant housekeeper. If I could get him to slap me, even better. Some men like that. But anything that shows he made me do it will do. And that's where step three comes in. Step three is where I turn the tables on Hannah. Step three is where she finds that everything she's worked so hard for is about to go up in smoke. Because if I put those videos up on YouTube, Harvey Carter's life as he knows it will be over. He will be shunned, humiliated. He'll lose his law practice, or at least the bulk of his clients. I mean, who wants to be associated with that? The Carters will be social pariahs. I can't imagine little Mia, sweet as pie, ever being accepted into an exclusive private school. I know these establishments. They'll come up with all sorts of excuses as to why she's not the right fit. And anyway,